So following on from what Stephen has been talking about, we'll read from Psalm 73. Psalm 73. It's entitled, God is my strength and portion forever. A psalm of Asaph. Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. For I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For they had no pangs until death, their bodies fat and sleek. They are not in trouble as others are. They are not stricken like the rest of mankind. Therefore, pride is their necklace. Violence covers them as a garment. Their eyes swell out through fatness. Their hearts overflow with follies. They scoff and speak with malice. Loftily, they threaten oppression. They set their mouths against the heavens, and their tongue struts through the earth. Therefore, his people turn back to them and find no fault in them. And they say, how can God know? Is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are wicked, always at ease. They increase in riches. All in vain have I kept my heart and washed my hands with incense. For all the day long I have been stricken and rebuked every morning. If I had said, I will speak thus, I would have betrayed the generation of your children. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task, until I went to the sanctuary of God, and then I discerned their end. Truly you set them in slippery places. You make them fall to ruin. How they are destroyed in a moment, swept away utterly by terrors. Like a dream when one awakes. O Lord, when you rouse yourself, you despise them as phantoms. When my soul was embittered, when I was pricked in heart, I was brutish and ignorant. I was like a beast toward you. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You hold me right. You hold my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterwards you will receive me to glory. Whom have I have in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire beside you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For behold, those who are far from you shall perish. You put an end to everyone who is unfaithful to you. But for me, it is good to be near God. I have made the Lord God my refuge, that I may tell of all your works. Here ends our reading.
So we come to the psalm today. I imagine that most of you, most of us, will at one time or another felt that pang of feeling sorry for someone. Maybe it moved you in some way to give them something or to help them in some way. But if you've ever felt that, it can actually be almost physically painful. It can be a real kind of heaviness in your heart. When you look upon someone's situation, what they're facing, or something that happens to them in a moment, and it's almost sore. I wonder also if you've ever felt a similar way, but for yourself, if you've ever felt sorry for yourself. It's not a nice thing. It's a really hard thing, actually, to deal with if that is how you've ever felt. Sometimes people speak, maybe a little bit flippantly, about a pity party. But there's no party at all. It's hard. It's difficult. I'm sure we've all felt sad, maybe sometimes really sad, maybe to the point of, or actually even being depressed. There's lots of similar words, you know, to feel sorry for yourself, self-pity, to be depressed or sad, or maybe despondent is another word that you might use. One of the things, though, is that it's interesting for us to consider what it is that might make us feel sorry for ourselves. You know, when we feel sorry for someone else, it's likely because they lack something, or they're in a situation that you think they're just never going to be able to get themselves out of this situation, or the situation is just so difficult so troubled in so many ways. Or maybe it's just that you can't see a way out. The situation holds little promise for them. Sometimes I think we feel pity for people because we say, life should just not be like that. Or we look from the privileged position we are in and see our life as being better or preferable to theirs, and so we feel sorry for them. If you've felt sorry for yourself, then I wonder what it is that has brought that on. It's probably a very similar thing to when you might feel sorry for someone else. You look at other people and you compare your life to theirs. And when we feel sorry for ourselves, it's so often that we feel hard done by. My life shouldn't be like this. Well, there's an element of things being hard in our lives, things we're having to face and deal with, which make us feel this way. It can make us feel sad or discouraged. We can feel self-pity or that sense of despondency. Sometimes we might even think, why do I bother? What is the point? And I think sometimes when we feel this way, there is often at the root of it, whether we can see or acknowledge it, envy. There's a lack of contentment. And what I've just described about how we might see others or how we might see and look upon our own lives is very well described to us by Asaph, the author of Psalm 73. He's very honest. Straight up, he says, I am envious. And it seems like later on as well, he describes the fact he's had enough. I'm fed up. And what's so important for us to recognize is that this is not just feelings that we need to kind of brush off, or we have to lift ourselves up and have a better, more positive attitude somehow. We've got to be very aware of these feelings, aware of the root of them, and recognize that they are actually very dangerous. They can lead us actually even away from God. But thankfully, we have here with Asaph part of his journey and what he does to turn it around and avoid the danger. And that's what we want to consider this morning. And so the first thing we need to look at is Asaph describes for us as really envy described. And so when we read verses 2 and 3, we read this. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled, my steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. He's envious, he states it, he understands that is how he's feeling. He looks around at others, he sees their lives and he's envious. He envies what they have. But he also envies what they don't have. You see, he goes on to say, they don't have problems like I do. So he envies what they don't have. And so in verse 3, he says they are prosperous. They have something that he doesn't. And in verse 4, it says they have no pangs until death. Their bodies are fat and sleek. Basically, these people live how they want. They've got no worries in life. I want that. And in verse 5, they're not in trouble as others are. They're not stricken like the rest of mankind. That suggests that he likely is stricken. He does face trouble of some sort. And as he looks around, it just seems that everybody around him has life pretty easy. And he's envious. But what he's also envious of, we read in verse 13 to 15, he says, all in vain have I kept my heart clean and washed my hands in innocence. For all the day long I've been stricken and rebuked every morning. If I had said, I will speak thus, I would have betrayed the generation of your children. He's looking at his life and he's saying, I'm a Christian. I love God. I try to live in such a way as to honor him. I've kept my hands clean. I've washed my hands in innocence. And what good has it done? Seriously, what's the point? Why am I even bothering with this? Look at all these other people. They don't follow God and things are really good. They've not got any problems, no worries. Why am I bothering? Seriously. If I just keep on living like this, I'm not going to get what I want. That's where he's at. That is how he is feeling. I don't know if you resonate really with this psalm. I think certainly at first, what he says, because this is really a psalm where he is comparing himself as a Christian, as a child of God, a believer, with those who are not believers. And he looks upon them and he feels a particular way about them. And maybe we can't really resonate with that. We don't look at every unbeliever and think life is going really well for them. They've got no worries or problems. We wouldn't be so general as to say that. And neither would we, I imagine, say that it's only unbelievers who have everything all together and everything's okay. I think it's very possible that we can look at other Christians and find ourselves envious. I think there are so many situations in our lives that even if we don't resonate with that first part, looking on the life of unbelievers, where we can, I think, understand and have maybe experienced what it is that Asaph himself is feeling. Looking at the life of other people, looking at our own lives and then thinking, it's just unfair. We feel hard done by. We look at others and we think, it's just easy for them. We can probably look around the building this morning and even feel that. We look at ourselves and we think, things are so hard for me. We feel envious, or we can feel self-pity for ourselves and our situation. And we feel a bit sad or depressed or despondent about it. And you know what? Actually, I think as we move on in life, I think we probably face this temptation even more. I think that's probably my own experience. And here's why. Because I think as we move on in life, arguably our lives look a little bit less like we imagined or would have hoped or would have expected them to look like. Does that make sense? You see, I still remember sitting every day after school with my best friend speaking about our life plans. It was a fresh conversation every day about the exact same things every single day. We were probably 14 or 15 at the time. And we would say, as if it was just as easy as deciding this, you know, I'm pretty sure I would want to get married in my mid-20s. So we would just say, yeah, I'm probably going to get married when I'm 25. The next day, you know, I'd be thinking about it from yesterday. I'm probably going to get married when I'm 24, actually. I want to be able to do that quite young. And so on we would go. And we would decide how many children we would have, of course. And then it would not be out of the realms of possibility, really, in our little daily daydreams, that it might be even an A-list Hollywood celebrity that we would get married to. That's not impossible, you know. But even now, you know what, being a little bit more realistic, whilst of course I am married to very much a Hollywood A-lister, thank you, Nicola. Phew, I didn't write that down, I'm glad I said it. You know what? There are many things in our lives that we might have hoped for or expected, and this just doesn't look like that. For the man who was fairly certain he was getting married by his mid-20s, I was single for the whole of my 20s. Never got married till I was in my 30s. That didn't pan out as planned. There are things in our lives which we expected or hoped for and it hasn't happened. And there are things in our lives we wouldn't choose. There are things that we might like to be different. And so as we look upon these things, we can easily look upon the lives of other people and feel envious. You know, it's interesting, as I described it to the children, I was quite careful about how I described it. And I think as we describe it to children, we might use or describe envy with what I might call big ticket items. You know, to envy is to say, oh, I want that car, or I would envy someone how they have a big house or lots of money. But actually, I think, again, as we get a little bit older, we can find ourselves feeling envious about some of the far smaller things. It's not just about what other people have. It's about the fact that we have things that we don't want. And other people don't have these things that we have that we don't want. You see, without even trying too hard, we can look at others and we can feel self-pity, we can feel despondent and envy because some people have their family nearby. They live close. It's easy for them. What a blessing. And we look at people who've raised their children in church and we find some whose children are all going on with the Lord and you haven't done the same. You grieve because yours do not. Or we consider our health and we think, look at them. They're healthy. They've got no issues, no struggles like me. They don't need constant medication. They don't know the pain that I do. Their life is not stopped in its tracks in an instant because of how my body can shut down and affect me. They don't have the uncertainty, the daily uncertainty for some because of health. And these types of things can make us feel a bit sorry for ourselves, make us sad or despondent. They can discourage us. Sometimes it's even fairly trivial things. You know, I was thinking if you play sport or you're part of a team and if you're in a team game and you make a mistake, then you can beat yourself up all about it. You feel down on yourself. You look at other players and say, they don't make mistakes. They're better than me. I'm no good. And we kind of wallow in this self-pity. But the reality is it comes from comparison. It comes from looking at others. And really it's envy which is at the root of that. We can so easily look at what others have and that we don't. They're married, I'm not. They've got a good marriage, I don't. I was thinking of my little brother and his family this week with the twins and their oldest as well, all born prematurely. And they, with David, with cerebral palsy, they can easily look at others with children and say, so easy for them. They've got kids who are healthy. Life is so easy for them. My sister-in-law, who never ever had that baby bump, she can so easily look at other people who are pregnant and it can make her envious because her children were born premature. She never got to hold her baby for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And so to see a lady with a pregnant tummy or a mother holding her newborn can trigger that and we can feel sorry for ourselves. We can feel sad and despondent and it comes really from a root of envy. But then others could look at them and say, you know what? You've got kids. I don't even have kids. Or you were able to have kids and I'm not even able to have kids. And so we can just go round and round and round, and I'm sure you can see how easy it is for us to look at other people and compare, to have a feeling of envy, which really shows itself as self-pity and despondency and of sadness or of loneliness. And it might make us sometimes think, what's the point? Why even bother? You know what? The challenge is really to understand ourselves better. Because what might just feel like sadness or despondency or self-pity, when we look at it, is actually envy. It's a lack of contentment. And that's where we've got to look down to. Because if it's just sadness, and maybe you can just brush that off and do something that makes you happy. But if the root is envy, then there's a deeper problem and a far more dangerous problem. That's what we're going to move on to, our second point. If the first point is to simply look at envy and understand it, the second thing is to realize it's dangerous. I don't know if you've ever heard people say, and it's a terrible, terrible thing, but I've heard people say to other people who are depressed, you just need to get over it. Just give yourself a shake. Like it's that easy. It's just so trite. People say, look, you'll be fine. You just need to get over it. It's all going to work out in the end. But there's absolutely no guarantee of that. Basically saying, just brush it off. It's no big deal. But actually, you know what? Asaph here in this psalm reckons it's a really big deal. If these feelings of sadness, despondency, self-pity actually are coming from a root of envy, then that's a real big problem and it needs to be dealt with. You see, in verse 2, here's what Asaph says, but as for me, my feet had almost stumbled, my steps had nearly slipped. Don't overlook this. Please don't look at your feelings of sadness or pity. Don't try and disguise them. Don't try and cover them up and ignore them. They are potentially very dangerous. Asaph recognizes that his feeling this way could take him away from God. And you know what? I have seen that. So thankful that it's not been true in my own life, but by the grace of God. But I've seen it in the lives of other people who would have said they were Christians. They've felt disappointed with God. They've looked around and they've seen what they don't have, or they've seen others whose lives seemingly are much easier. And they understand that God is sovereign. He's in control of all things. The one who holds life and breath in his hands, who gives all things to us. And they struggle with that. They wrestle with that. And so there can be anger and disappointment with God. And ultimately, many of them walk from God. Life doesn't look like what they would like or would have hoped or even expected it to. Christians can feel like God should have given them more, done more for them. And that's why it's so dangerous. That's why people slip. You know, some Christians feel like they're trying to live a life of righteousness and of purity, and where is it getting them? They just feel like they're missing out. They're not getting what they want in life. And so I've seen it with close friends around me. They set God aside as such. I'm just going to place him on the shelf for a little moment or two while I go and get what I want or who I want or do the things I want to do. And I'm going to come back. Just take him back off the shelf again and just, he'll be part of my life again. But they don't. And ultimately they slip. So we need to be aware of and understand, if at times we feel this sadness and self-pity, this discontentment in life, is it coming from a place of envy? Because if it is dangerous and it can lead us away from God. So don't play with it. Don't simply brush it off. Understand it. And what is so, so helpful is what we see here in the psalm from Asaph. I'm sure you've heard of the phrase, a game of two halves, a sporting term, meaning that for one half of the game, it was heading in a very particular direction. No doubt, meaning that one team was dominant, looked like they were no doubt going to come out victorious. And that you have a halftime break, and then comes the second half, and it's an entirely different game. The team who was getting beaten in the first half come out, and now they're the ones who are well on top, and the game is turned on its head. And that's what we see here in Psalm 73. It is a psalm of two halves. Asaph is despondent, he's disappointed, he's let down, he's had enough, he's envious. That's the first half of the psalm. And for all intents and purposes, it seems like that's likely where it's going to go. He's going to continue in his pit of despair. And it may well be that he could slip and stumble and fall. But it's a psalm of two halves. And that's not how it goes. And the key thing is what Asaph does that we ourselves also must do. When we face this temptation, when we understand truly how we're feeling and the root of it, in verse 17. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I discerned their end. This is absolutely the key for us. We may feel this way. We've just said there's great danger. And the danger is, of course, that these thoughts may cause us to slip. It may take us away from God. To have these types of feelings and these thoughts is very, very dangerous. And here's what you've got to do with them. And this is a picture I've shared with many people, possibly even shared it with yourselves. But it takes me back to the days when I might have watched some cartoons. And the classic cartoon was Tom and Jerry. I guess many of you will be familiar with Tom and Jerry. The cat and mouse always up to no good, doing terrible tricks and things to one another. And maybe you can imagine a scene with Tom and Jerry where there's a bomb. It's a classic kind of cannonball-shaped round black thing with a little fuse on the end, and they light it. And of course, the aim is to give it to the other one so it will blow up in their face. And they kind of throw it between one another or they hide it somewhere. Classically, Tom ends up holding it. It goes off and his face is all black, or he's a skeleton or whatever it is that happens, you know, because he's just not been able to get rid of it quick enough and it's blown up in his face. Let me say this. When these thoughts of despondency, self-pity, envy, doubt, and despair come, they are dangerous. They are like that bomb. And when we are having these thoughts, it's as if we are holding that bomb and the fuse has been lit. And the danger is as if we hold on to these thoughts, they might just go off. Has the potential to damage me, if not completely destroy me. That is the danger of these types of thoughts. And so you know what you're going to do if you're in that cartoon scenario. What are you going to do? You're going to pick it up and you're going to throw it right back. What does Asaph do? He felt this way until he went into the sanctuary of God. You need to say, God, I cannot deal with these thoughts. They are too great for me. They are dangerous. They could destroy me. And you need to throw them back. You need to say, God, I cannot deal with these. I cannot deal with these. I need to give these thoughts to you. And I need to take time and take stock and be with you. Because you know what? See, when he does that, that's how we have our Psalm of two halves. That's how everything changes for him. See, he goes on from verse 17 when he considers God and when he considers these people that he's been comparing him life with. In verses 17 to 20, he considers those who live their lives as they please. And he sees things are not going to end well for them. And it is a sobering reminder that those who are not Jesus' disciples, so for you who do not love God and follow him, you face judgment as your end. And maybe in this life, there is an ease of living life the way that you would choose. Maybe you might even get some of the things you want and avoid the things you do not want. But ultimately, there is judgment where you will stand before God and face him. And so when envy and discontentment rises, take a minute. Think. And Christian, consider your end. If these feelings are so dangerous and might blow up in your face to the point they could lead you from God, consider your end. Consider that one day you will stand before God. And it is only as a child of God that you are, as we said earlier, clothed in perfect righteousness. Don't let these thoughts, don't let that sin destroy you. What the psalmist also does is not just consider and compare his life with others, but he looks at his own life. He says in verses 21 and 22, when my soul was embittered, when I was pricked in heart, I was brutish and ignorant. I was like a beast towards you. It's as if he's realized, what was I thinking? Who am I to question and doubt God or be disappointed in him? Who am I to treat you this way? As if you've somehow let me down or failed to be good to me. And he realizes that. And he's sorry for it. The conclusion for the matter for Asaph seems to be this. Read it in verse 25. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire beside you. There are many things he doesn't have, it would seem, that he would like. There are things that he has that he doesn't want to have. And yet here in verse 25, he seems to be saying this. But I do have God, and he is enough. Got God, and that is enough. He goes on in verse 26, my flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. If my heart and strength may fail, if I do not get the things I want, if I have things that I do not want, well, you know what? God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. I am going to be satisfied in him. You might remember verses from the book of Philippians chapter 4, verses from Paul, and he says from verse 11, not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. For I know how to be brought low and I know how to abound, and in any and every circumstance I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. What a wonderful, precious place to be in. To say I am content. Whether I am in plenty or I abound, whether I have what I want or do not, whether there are things that I do not want but have, I am content. Are you there? Are you content because you have Jesus? Are you content despite all the other things because you have Jesus? Is he enough? Because there is, I think, a danger that Jesus is not enough for us. And I think it's because we put so much emphasis and value on the things of this world. We think we need these things to be happy and to be content and to enjoy life. We place great value on the things that are temporary, when, as Asaph says, whom have I in heaven but you? And Jesus says, does he not, life is more than what you eat or drink, so why do you worry about these things? And the thing is, we do worry about these things and we value these things. But we also know this, true life is to have Jesus. He who has the Son, he who has Jesus, has life. He who does not have the Son does not have life. Do you believe that is true? And if you do, are you content then because you do have Jesus? Knowing that indeed you have life? You see, life is not fulfilled when we have certain things or do not have the things that trouble us. He who has the Son has life. Do you have Jesus? And therefore, having life, are you content? Are you satisfied? Is he enough? If he's not, then you're not going to love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. If there's discontentment, if there's envy, and you find yourself chasing after these things or running away from some of the troubles and difficulties, if Jesus is not enough, then ultimately you need to watch your step because you may slip and fall. And so let me finish by saying this. It's a remarkable turnaround, isn't it? Here's a man who's about to slip, but who turns to God and takes time to stop and think, to find perspective. What I want to say is what I've said a number of times over the last few weeks. Asaph, it seems, positions himself in a place where he can see Jesus, where he can then better understand who Jesus is and who he is in light of that, where he can understand the gospel. He goes into the sanctuary, meaning he spends time with God, and there he finds perspective. He won't understand everything, of course not, but he does find perspective. I mean, consider again what he says in verse 25. Whom have I in heaven but you? There is nothing on earth that I desire beside you. This is a huge change from the man of verse 3 who's envious, who nearly slips because of how he sees other people live and all the things that they have that he wants. It's an incredible turnaround. So he understands how he feels. He understands that it is dangerous, and he throws it and gives it to God. He goes to God because he alone can deal with these things. You know, as I close, I think most of us will find our lives as the Apostle Paul did. You remember God gave him a thorn in his flesh. He didn't want it. He prayed that it would go away. I wonder if he looked at others and thought, I want what they have. I want no thorn. Or he thought, they just have it so easy. I wonder if he even was tempted to just pack it all in and throw it away. It's so unfair. Like, I've done all these things for God. I've lived my life this way and I still have to deal with these things. And like Paul, maybe you and I will pray about what makes us discontent, what might be making us envious. And maybe God would remove that thing. Maybe he would add what we desire, but likely our lives are going to be lived with things we would not desire. And they can make us feel weak. We can struggle with them, but we must understand that these things can be turned to strength. My prayer for you, and I pray that you would pray for me and for one another. Pray it for other people, is that along with Paul in 2 Corinthians verse 2, we can say, my grace is sufficient for you. God says that to him. Are you able to say, God, your grace is sufficient for me, for your power is made perfect in weakness? Do all you can today then to learn about the grace of God. Cherish it and treasure it more than anything or anyone. And indeed, you will find it. You will find Jesus to be sufficient for you. Amen.